talking to me?
Funny like I'm a clown, I use you.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead. Make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Good morning. Welcome to the We Are Movie Geeks podcast. I'm Tom Stockman.
Jim Batts.
Kate Marquis.
Hello, Kate. Today is January 16th.
It's the 23rd, actually.
That's what I said. And Kate has joined us.
That's
Kate
your
has been
alternate
here
date.
In a couple of weeks. Welcome back to the guest chair, Kate. Kate, of course,
reviews for
WeAreMovieGeeks.com and The Jewish Light. Kate, let's see, you missed last week and the week before. The week before, we talked about our favorite movies. I think Lynn was with us. We talked about the best movies of 2016. What was your favorite movie of 2016, Kate?
Well, I think Manchester by the Sea, although Moonlight, I've been recommending that to a lot of people, too.
All right, well, good. And then last week, when Jim Tudor was our guest in the studio, we counted down our least favorite movies of 2016. Kate, what was your least favorite movie of 2016?
Oh, so many stinkers to choose from.
Well, if you had to, which gave us the biggest stink?
Oh, jeez.
Let's see.
You want to come back to this later?
Well, let's see. What were some of your stinkers?
Well, my number one stinker was Warcraft. I think Zoolander 2 was on mine. Let's see. Masterminds was on mine. Oh, gosh. I had a couple of critical darlings there. I'm not a fan of American Honey, although a lot of people are. I know that. Mm-hmm. And let's see. Gosh, I'm trying to recall. I wasn't a fan of the Neon Demon. So.
Yeah. Well, right. I have to concur about Zoolander, too. Okay. That would probably be.
All right. Well, you know what? Number one on my bottom list was Dirty Grandpa, which starred Robert De Niro, unfortunately. And you guys are going to see a Robert De Niro movie here in about an hour and a half. Are you going to that?
Mm-hmm.
And it's called The Comedian. I don't know a whole lot about it. Did you see the cast in this thing?
Yeah, it's a pretty heavy hitter cast.
Charles Grodin, Billy Crystal, Cloris Leachman, Harvey Keitel, Danny DeVito, Robert De Niro, and Jimmy Walker.
Well, it looks like a lot of comedians are playing themselves in it.
Mm-hmm. Is that what it is?
Sort of sounds like a follow-up to Mr. Saturday Night, the old Billy Crystal movie, in which he played a character and all these comedians came in playing themselves.
Or the King of Comedy when Robert De Niro played a stand-up comedian. Yeah. All right, well, we can come back next week to review that, along with some other stuff. But let's talk about the top 12 at the box office. Number 12 this weekend was Moana. Is that still around? Isn't that open in, like, November? Oh, well.
December.
December, all right. It's still doing well. Bye Bye Man was number 11. I saw Bye Bye Man. I'm going to review that here in a few minutes. Yes. Sleepless, isn't that the thing with Jamie Foxx that nobody saw? That's number 10 at $3.7 million. You didn't see that, did you?
Well, No critics saw it.
Number 9 was The Founder. We all saw that. That's really good. We're going to review that in a few minutes. $3.8 million. Number 8, Patriots Day. I'm glad that didn't drop any further. That's just, still kind of a head-scratcher why that's not doing a whole heck of a lot better. That was number 8. It was $6 million. 7 was Monster Trucks with $7 million. Jim saw Monster Trucks.
Surprising it's still that far up in the top 10.
Yes. Rogue One, Star Wars Story is number 6 with $7 million over the weekend. Number 5 was La La Land, $8.3 million. Number 4 was Sing, animated film that made $9 million. Number 2 was Hidden Figures, was number two, number one, though, last two weekends.
Last week's number one, yeah.
$16.2 million. Number 2 was Triple X, Return of Xander Cage, made $20 million in the U.S., but that thing cleaned up globally. And I saw that, too. I'm going to review that here in a little bit. Number 1 was M. Night Shyamalan's Split, which I reviewed over at We Are Movie Geeks. Did you see that, Kate?
No, I didn't. Okay. I wasn't sure I wanted to see it.
Oh, it's pretty good. I'll be reviewing it here in a little bit. All right, so that's the top 10 at the box office this weekend. Gold and Dog's Purpose and some other movies start, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see about Dog.
Yes. Let's start out with some reviews. Let's start out with the latest from Pedro Almodovar, which we all saw a month or so ago, and it is called Julieta. Kate, you're going to be reviewing that for WeAreMovieGeeks.com, correct?
Right.
How many stars out of 5 do you think you'll be giving
Julieta? I'd give it
Julieta?
4.5.
Ooh, you
it's
liked
really
it.
Good.
What did you like about it?
Damn. Well, many, many things. I mean, first of all, I'm a big fan of the director, so I have a tendency to like his films. But this was one of his good ones in particular. It's still in his common theme of films about women, you know, with complex stories.
But certainly a lot different than his last one.
Well, it is.
Sure.
It is.
Not
in many ways.
With the drag queens that you often
see. No, it's not that. It kind of leaves out the melodrama. It leaves out the kind of over-the-top stuff. It's not bright and candy-colored like his films often can be. But it has beautiful photography. Mm-hmm. Beautiful set decoration, but it's much more of a mystery than his films often are, and it's a little more of a drama in which people seem to be one person, and then they seem to be something else. Events seem to have unfolded this way, and it's revealed that they're different. But it's an intriguing film in which you never know what's going to happen in the next scene.
In one aspect, it's, you're talking about, you know, drag queens and all. It's kind of a throwback to sort of the women's dramas of the 30s and 40s. You could have seen, you know, that, like an Anne Sheridan or Joan Crawford doing a story similar to this back in the day, really. You know, in which you go into a woman's past and all that. So, yeah,
but it's still very much a modern film. And the main character, Julieta, is played by two different actresses, one in the current time period and another one in an extended flashback. And the basic premise of the film is this successful woman who's on the verge of breaking up with her longtime boyfriend suddenly gets news that the daughter who disappeared many, many years ago at age 18, that somebody has come across her, has found her, and she becomes obsessed with finding this daughter again. And then you find out information about the daughter, their life together, her husband, the father of the girl, and their life. And it's fascinating one end to another, and just beautiful photography.
And Kate, I hope you won't think of me as a sexist, but the woman, the actress, I believe her name is Adriana Ugarte, who plays young Juliet, is one of the most gorgeous women I'd seen on screen in the last year or
so. That's true.
And she's a very good actress also. She's in the flashback sequences, of course. I guess that are set 20-25 years in the past. And I was thinking, you know, mid-1980s Melanie Griffith type of vibe with a little Charlotte Theron, but just lovely woman and very good actress.
It's always tricky to put someone and have two actors play the same role even when they age. Sometimes it's not done very well. I really love the reveal, if you remember the scene with the towel.
Yes,
it was. And it was really sort of moving. And Almodovar is such a confident storyteller.
Yes, he is.
I mean, he doesn't need drag queens and flashy colors, which he often puts in his films. I haven't seen all of his films. I can't say I'm much of an expert on it. I've seen maybe half of his films. And some of those I haven't really liked, but this one is really good.
The last one I didn't care much for at all. We're so excited. About the airplane with the stewards. And it was just a little way. It was way over the top.
That's in his vein in which he does those very comic over the top. Like you say, he's a great storyteller, so he always surprises you. But, you know, not everybody cares for that kind of comic vein. This is much more straightforward drama, and in many ways it's more accessible for that reason, because it doesn't have those distractions.
And those early flashback sequences on the train almost have sort of a Hitchcock vibe to them.
A lot of Hitchcock in this.
In that sequence where she talks to the stranger on the train, the whole thing with the stag running, you know, alongside the train.
Mm-hmm. Very good movie. Yeah. All right, let's move on. So we highly recommend Julieta and look for Kate's review over at WeirdMovieGeeks.com later this week. I saw Bye Bye Man. Bye Bye Man opened over a week ago, but it did pretty well its opening weekend, and it did okay the second weekend. It was number 11 in the top 12, which is more than I can say for Scorsese's Silence, which never cracked the top 12. Bye Bye Man's a horror film, of course.
There's something happening. He's found us.
Who?
Don't think it. Don't say it. The bye-bye man.
And the more you think about him, the closer he gets.
And it's about this word, this name, bye-bye man. Don't say it. Don't think it. If you say the word bye-bye man, it's all sort of vague. I don't really quite understand what happens to you. But if you say the word bye-bye man, or you identify who this monster is, then horrible things happen to you. You must kill everyone that you've said the words bye-bye man to, I think, or something terrible will happen to you. I'm not quite sure. It's not a bad horror film, though. It's actually well-made. It's well-directed. It has some of that sort of detached dread that you saw in It Follows, which is a really good horror film from last year. Mm-hmm. And it's got some of the Babadook in it, and here's this mysterious figure that people talk about, but they really can't define. Or Candyman, even.
I was going to say, Candyman, you have to repeat
his name.
We
have to say his name. Yeah. Beetlejuice, too, I guess. It stars this guy named Doug Smith, and he plays a college student who rents a home along with his girlfriend, who's played by Cressida Bonas, who apparently dated Prince Harry. And they have a third roommate named Lucian Lithescount, is this actor's name. And the house isn't haunted, but there's a little nightstand in the house. And it is haunted, which they find out in the basement, and they put up in one of the bedrooms, and they open the drawer, and there's all this writing on the bottom of the drawer that says, "Don't think it, don't say it," over and over again. And then he lifts up, you know, that, and underneath that is written, "Bye-bye, man." So poor Doug Smith has seen the awful words, "Bye-bye, man." And so he has a medium come over, and they perform a seance, and somehow Bye-Bye Man's spirit is in there. It's all sort of silly and sort of vague. I didn't quite understand, in what context does the Bye-Bye Man have this power? Wouldn't people just say Bye-Bye Man when they're saying goodbye to somebody somewhere? I don't know. It seems a little silly. And there's some flashbacks to 1969 that sort of try to fill in the gaps in this story. And at one point, they go back to this woman who had lived through this tragedy that had happened 50 years earlier. And she is played by Faye Dunaway, believe it or not.
What?
Jim and I just watched a 16mm print of Bonnie and Clyde a couple weeks ago, and that was made 50 years ago. And I don't think she's been on the big screen too much in the past few years. Maybe she has. I certainly haven't seen her in anything.
Done some TV stuff. Yeah.
But I'm glad she's in it, and she's actually really good. She only has one extended scene, and she plays the old lady that they go and visit that kind of fills in the gaps and kind of explains what's going on. I've seen this character in other films. I was glad to see Faye Dunaway in this film. My biggest beef with this film is... It stars Doug Smith, but it also stars Doug Jones. And you know who Doug Jones is?
Oh, yes. He was a Pan's Labyrinth.
That's right. He was Fauno in Pan's Labyrinth. But he's sort of a mime and a contortionist. And he can do unusual things with his body. And when I saw that he had been cast as this monster character, I was sort of excited about it. But he doesn't... It seems like they would have taken advantage of the physical skills that Doug Jones has, and they don't. Anybody could have played Bye-Bye Man. I could have played Bye-Bye Man.
It was a missed
opportunity. And this Bye-Bye Man monster is barely in the film. He's only in it for the last 5 minutes, and he doesn't do much. He just waves his arms around and things like that, which is too bad. Overall, Bye-Bye Man is a slightly above average horror film. It's not one of these terrible horror movies that usually opens in January. It's not too bad. It's also PG-13, which is kind of strange because it's really kind of mean-spirited, and some really horrible things happen to most of the cast. But to get around the PG-13 rating, they just simply leave the blood out. There's a scene where this guy comes in with his shotgun and just starts shooting people left and right, and people in wheelchairs and children and stuff. And he shoots them with the shotgun. They go flying through the air up against the wall. And in a normal movie, there'd be like a big blood stain on the wall, but they just leave the blood out, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But I guess
whippy.
If you like horror movies and see a lot of horror movies, you can do a lot worse than the Bye-Bye Man. But if you don't like horror movies, you're probably not going to like the Bye-Bye Man. If I were to have reviewed it at WeirdMovieGeeks.com, I would maybe give it maybe 3 stars or something.
Yeah, pretty generous.
Yeah, so let's move on. What else did we see? Let's talk about The Founder.
We wanted something different, and that's when my brother here comes up with one of his brilliant ideas.
Order's ready in 30 seconds, not 30 minutes.
Unique, original, there's nothing like this.
The Founder stars
Michael
Keaton as Ray Kroc. Jim reviewed that.
I reviewed that. I think I gave it 3.5 stars.
I would have given it more. I
tell you what. My problem with it is, before we get into the plot, I just thought that the last half of it lost some of the pep of the first half. I thought it started to drag a little bit when Ray Kroc turns to the dark side. And
I didn't think that.
But, boy, you know, I did say that if you're a fan of Michael Keaton, this is a must-see. Mm-hmm. He's having a really interesting, I guess we'd call it almost a second career.
Yeah, renaissance.
Because, you know, he came out of the gate hot with the Night Shift and Mr. Mom, and then really hit the heights with the Batman films. And then his career kind of trickled off a little bit, and then he was brought back a couple of years ago with the great starring role in Birdman, following up with Spotlight, and now with this film, it's a, you know, sort of a great second act. And this is hopefully he's going to hit even greater heights after this film. But should get into the plot of it. This is the story of Ray Kroc, who claims to be the founder of McDonald's. And as we watch the film, we find out that's not quite the case. When we first meet him, he's a 52-year-old sort of a Willy Loman type character, going from, you know, diner to drive-in, trying to sell these multiple spindle milkshake mixers. And the very first scene is him giving his pitch to the camera about how, you know, the supply will meet the demand will come up to the supply and that mm-hmm. sort of thing. And this guy just ain't buying it. So he's having to lug this heavy thing back and put it back into his trunk. And those are some great sequences. And then he'll order lunch at the drive-in, and they, you know, it comes cold and it's wrong. And it's like, I ordered the pork plate, not the fried chicken. And he has to. This is at the time before cell phones, so the guy is on the road, salesman on the road, checked in with the office with a payphone. So he's lugging all these nickels and dimes into the phone machine. His secretary or receptionist at the headquarters back in Chicago said, yeah, there's this place that wants to order 6 mixers. And this guy goes, that can't be right. So he calls this little restaurant in San Bernardino, California, and the guy on the other line says, yeah, we could actually use 8 instead. So Ray says, I got to see what's going on over there, and he travels cross-country and goes to the McDonald's hamburger stand that's run by the McDonald brothers, and we get to meet them. There's Mac McDonald, who's played by the great John Carroll Lynch, who I guess might be best known as Marge's husband in the Fargo film.
Norm Gunderson.
Yes. Mm. I brought you some Arby's. He's just a terrific actor. He's a real gregarious guy. He's real friendly to Ray. Ray orders a sandwich there, and he's surprised. Well, for one thing, it's not a drive-in. You have to go up to the window, order your food, and he orders his burger, and, you know, seconds later, I said, here you go, and he says, well, what's that? He said, well, that's what you ordered, and he's perplexed, and it's not on silverware.
Where do I eat it?
Yeah, well, just wherever. You take it home, in your car, you can sit on the bench or whatever. And he's sitting on the bench, and Mac is sweeping up, and Ray's, you know, saying what a great thing this is, and Ray introduces himself, and Mac says, well, let's take the tour, and he takes him inside there, and it's all sort of a choreographed, mechanized machine that's orchestrated by Mac's brother, Dick McDonald, who's played by the wonderful Nick Offerman, who's really, I think in my review I call him a sandwich savant. He's really hyper-focused, and it's kind of a craft, maybe even an art to making these burgers. And
I think that it looks like a Henry Ford's assembly line for cars, which is really impressive. You know, the idea that somebody would apply that to food.
Well,
which
one of my favorite
strikes Ray Kroc.
Yeah, one of my favorite sequences is them talking about how they decided to do that, taking over a tennis court and taking some chalk and mapping out where everything is going to go in the kitchen and doing this and that. So Ray gets fixated on this place. He tells his wife, who's played by the great Laura Dern, who's kind of, you know, heard all of his get-rich-quick schemes, and she says, okay, whatever, and she's not that enthusiastic about it. But Ray comes back to there. He's a persistent suitor, I call him in the review, and he's like, guys, we got to franchise this, and Dick is kind of against this, because, well, we tried that with a place, you know, at the north of here and down in New Mexico, and, you know, one place was selling tamales, and, you know, we can't do the quality control, and Ray says, I'll handle that. And so he starts opening McDonald's and franchising them in the Chicago area. I think the first one is in Des Plaines. And Ray, you know, it kind of clashes with Dick over the phone about the designs of the McDonald's, but he's adamant about keeping it, you know, pure. He actually franchises it to one of his buddies, and he goes over there in another great sequence and sees that on the McDonald's sign it says chicken on a biscuit and corn on the cob.
Let's get on with the review.
Yes, and they put lettuce on the burgers. My goodness.
Oh, my.
Okay.
Yes.
So you didn't like this as much as we did, it sounds like.
I say, you know, when he gets too greedy, Ray does.
Well,
and he wants to take over. And it's the second half is pretty much him kind of stealing the McDonald's name and the whole concept.
Well, here's where I disagree. You're saying he comes off as kind of a dirty rat. I think he comes off as the smart one. It's more about the stupidity of the McDonald's brothers, frankly. It was Ray Kroc had the vision and the ambition and the drive. These McDonald's brothers made one stupid decision after another, especially it's kind of closer to the end where they already don't trust Ray Kroc, and they shouldn't. But he says, oh, well, let's figure out this contract and we'll just have to do a handshake on it. Well, at that point, they do. They shake his hand instead of getting up with their attorney. I kind of lost sympathy for those guys at that point. Go ahead. I mean, he was a shrewd businessman, Kroc, and that's how he became successful. Well, if it wasn't for Ray Kroc, the McDonald's would have had their little restaurant in California, and that would have been it.
Well, that's right, and I agree that, you know, that he was a shrewd businessman, and they weren't. But I think they had different visions. Ray Kroc, in this film, is portrayed as somebody relentlessly ambitious. And at one point, he says to the McDonald brothers, you know, you guys, you shouldn't be in business. You don't have the kind of killer instinct businesses wore. If my competitor were drowning, I'd put a hose down his throat. Yeah. And it's like that illustrates the different view that these guys, because the McDonald brothers, they want to be in business, but they want to be ethical and they want to be, do everything the right way. And they're not concerned about conquering the world, which is Ray Kroc's ambition. And he does roll right over these fellows. And I think when they get to the handshakes scene, the way that's portrayed, it's like, the McDonald brothers kind of know what's going on, but they also know at this point they can't stop him.
Yeah,
there's
defeated.
Nothing they can do. They're admitting defeat by shaking his hand. But that was the way I interpreted it.
I
thought I liked those portrayals, the way that these guys
were,
a lot of the different kind of idea of business, and this guy has this, burning ambition. And you're right, McDonald's would not have been anything with
them. I agree with everything you guys are saying. I just don't think Ray Kroc comes off as quite as evil as you might.
Well, that scene with his wife at the dinner table, she says, pass the salt, and he says, I want a divorce.
Right.
I was like, that's
pretty
damn evil. But
she didn't believe in him.
Well, that scene opens up with her saying, hey, I found a couple that want a franchise. So she actually is getting on board with it.
Yeah, I think by then it was too late. I think the ship had sailed. Let's move on, though. We've gone way over.
Right.
Okay, I saw XXX, The Return of Xander Cage.
Whatever it is you're looking for, you're going to come up short.
Does this mean you're not making me breakfast in the morning?
We're willing to die to keep the world safe. How about you?
I live for this.
I'm not sure if anybody was clamoring for a new XXX movie. There was one made in 2003, which starred Vin Diesel as Xander Cage. And then he didn't bother coming back for the sequel a couple of years later. They brought in Ice Cube, who played a different character. His name was Darius Stone. But now they've come out with this new XXX movie. And it's a lot of fun, actually. It's about Xander Cage, and he's the XXX is a designation for the super top secret CIA agents, and they're all being recruited by Samuel Jackson, who plays Gibbons. And it opens with Samuel Jackson interviewing somebody to join the XXX team, and that person is played by Neymar. Neymar is actually a Brazilian soccer superstar, and there's a funny scene. You'll like this, Jim, where Neymar says, oh, I thought I was auditioning for the Avengers.
Because he sounds like Namor the Submariner. That's what the name is.
So the plot involves this device called Pandora's Box, which it controls satellites, and it can bring them back to Earth on fire. So basically it's turning satellites into these meteors that crash into New York. And that happens at the beginning with Gibbons, played by Samuel Jackson. He is killed by one of these meteor satellite things that crashes to Earth. Or is he? So then anyway, CIA agent played by Tony Collette tracks down Xander Cage, played by Vin Diesel again, and he teams up. He gathers the team together, as they say. But I don't think any of these teammates were the same ones that were in the first XXX movie 14 years ago. He's He teams up with a woman, an actress named Sipika Petacone. I think I'm saying her name right. She is the current queen of Bollywood. He also, and they're trying to keep this device away from the villain, who is played by Donnie Yen, who we just saw in the new Star Wars movie. Yes. He was the blind guy.
Ip Man.
And his sidekick is played by Tony Jaa, or maybe it's pronounced Tony Yab. Maybe it's a soft J. But he is a Thailand martial arts superstar. I don't know if you've ever seen the Ong Bak, the Thai Warrior series. But this Tony Jaa guy is pretty amazing. He refuses to do any stunt that involves wire work or CGI enhancement. And if you've ever seen The Protector, there's a scene where he actually jumps up in the air and kicks a helicopter, causing it to crash. I mean, this guy is really pretty amazing. And so you've also got Sam Jackson, and then Ice Cube actually pops up later on in the film as Darius Stone. So this movie is just going to make so much darn money on the global scale with all these actors that are so popular in their countries. Donnie Yen is a superstar in China, of course. It's kind of a dumb movie, although, you know, the basic concept of these satellites falling out of the sky on fire is kind of clever. It's something a James Bond villain might do. There's a ton of just over-the-top action sequences. Like I say, this movie's going to probably make $1 billion when all is said and done, and they spent a lot of money. You know, it probably cost at least $100 million, maybe $150 million. It doesn't let you down in the terms of the scope of its action sequences. There's a really amazing scene where these guys are having this motorcycle chase through this forest, and it goes on and on, and it's really good. And then all of a sudden they go flying off this cliff into the ocean on their motorcycles. But as the motorcycles are descending into the ocean, these water skis suddenly materialize on the bottom of their motorcycles. So they continue to have this chase through the ocean, through these big giant waves that look like a surfer would be running through. It's kind of over the top and it's kind of silly, but it's pretty cool. And then the climax takes place on this. Everybody's on this cargo plane, and the pilot dies. So the plane is falling out of the sky at a rate where gravity ends. So they're all they're all floating through the air in this cargo plane fighting and stuff. It's pretty amazing. And then every other scene, it just has these gorgeous women and, you know, in bikinis drinking these big drinks and stuff and dancing. It's silly stuff.
It sounds like a Fast and Furious film without the emphasis on the cars.
I'm sure that's probably how it got bankrolled. I think there is a new Fast and Furious film coming out this summer.
There always is.
Well, they did a brilliant job of releasing it sort of right as the trailers for the Fast and Furious movie are rolling out. People say, oh, I'm going to go see Vin Diesel in Fast and Furious. This will hold me over till the new Fast and Furious movie comes. It's a lot of fun, this XXX. I'm not surprised it's doing well, and I think they'll probably do another XXX movie here in a couple of years. So
he wants to have multiple franchises.
It's dumb. You know, it's dumb fun. So there you go. XXX.
Yes.
I give it if I were to review it at the site, I'd probably give it, I don't know, 3.5 stars, maybe even 4. I had a good time with this movie. All right, let's move on then. I think we're down to our last movie to review, and that would be Split.
My name's Hedwig.
How old are you?
9.
I've never seen a case like this before. 23 identities live in Kevin's body. Who are you?
I reviewed Split over at WeirdMovieGeeks.com. I gave it 4 out of 5 stars. It stars James. Did you see Split?
No.
But Jim saw it.
I saw
James
it.
McAvoy is a guy with 23 personalities. Oh, my gosh. It's sort of a horror movie riff on Sybil in some ways. And he kidnaps these 3 young teenage girls, and he's keeping them captive somewhere. We don't know where, and that's a big mystery. And since it's directed by M. Night Shyamalan, there's a couple of big twists, one involving where it is exactly that he's holding these girls, and the other involving the 24th personality that's about to pop up. And it gets pretty good then. I think the weakness of this film is he's got these 23 personalities, but these personalities don't have much personality, if you know what I mean.
Well, they focus on only about 3 or 4 of them,
really.
Yeah,
but they're just generic. It's just like a little boy, and then like this sort of fussy British guy, and then a woman, and then there was like the dumb American janitor guy.
And a fashion designer.
Yeah, so I just didn't think... I wish they would have... spent more time with those characters that are sort of exist inside this guy's head. But in my opinion, the movie gets really good as it goes along. I think the second half is even better once it starts to focus on this emerging 24th character that's going to be coming out. I even said in my review, he's preparing it sort of like a Ben Stiller prepared Blue Steel in Zoolander. He's going to reveal it towards the end of the movie. And that's pretty good. And a lot of the explanation for that character comes from a character played by Betty Buckley. She's sort of the psychiatrist. And she has a pretty big part in a lot of dialogue about, you know, a lot of psychobabble about this guy's personalities because she's an expert on split personalities. It's pretty good. It's very clever, I would say. And then we could talk a little bit about the very last sequence, the epilogue, you might say.
Without
giving it away, but I think it's sort of brilliant, this weird 30-second epilogue at the very end, for a couple of reasons. For one thing, it's what everybody's talking about.
Yeah.
And for another reason, it may give hope to reteaming this director and this actor that appears up, and this third actor who... or this third person who they reference in that scene. Maybe a studio's going to green light that project. They've been talking about it for a long time.
Yeah.
And I think it made me wonder if there were clues throughout the film that we were in Shyamalan's universe. And it makes me want to see it again for that reason. Jim, I don't think you liked it quite as much. What did you like about it?
Well, I think my biggest problem was the 24th personality. I just thought it was just a generic hulked out type of character. He's almost becoming like David Naught becoming the werewolf in American Werewolf in London. Mm-hmm. It just kind of was this, you know, brutal character that I had a tough time that the psychological problem or not problem but you know uniqueness could manifest itself into this physical form, and I guess I was just getting a little claustrophobic. I felt that things dragged along with the flashbacks to one of the girls. Now I felt so silly because I realized that the main, you know, kidnapped girl in it is the same young actress as Anna Taylor-Joy from The Witch. She would fool me with her black haircut.
I thought the flashbacks did their job. It sort of developed her character is tough, and how this character survived this trauma as a young child, and how that it made her better able to handle this situation that she's in.
And I thought that the Betty Buckley character was kind of like an extension of Simon Oakland's character from Psycho.
Yeah.
You know, trying to explain everything to us, and it just kind of dragged on. And you knew that she was going to kind of figure out what was going on, and we were just kind of waiting for her to finally open her eyes as to what was happening. So she's playing amateur detective for part of it. So this is better than the last M. Night Shyamalan film I saw. Certainly, so
The Visit?
I didn't see The Visit.
Oh, the Visit was pretty good.
I did endure After Earth.
Oh yeah, After Earth was horrible. Yeah. Should have called it After Birth. It was so horrible.
It's just terrible. But
I didn't care for The Visit. How does this one compare to that one?
I think it's probably a little better. I liked The Visit though, but this was a really good movie, and I liked the 24th. Personality that came out. I thought that was really clever. It was a little silly, maybe.
But it
all sort of worked. All the pieces sort of fit together when you think of all the clues that were going on before. That's kind of when I want to see it again. And then this mysterious locale. Where the heck are they keeping where the heck is he keeping these girls? Well, that sort of ties in to who this 24th character is, and all that was very clever. I think it's a very good movie, and it made $40 million over the week, and I think it's going to continue to do well.
For another week, maybe.
Yeah. I gave it 4.5 stars. Jim, how many stars would you give it?
Oh, probably 3.
All right, so...
Well, I might go see it in the daylight.
All right, how many stars? So Jim and I are split on Split. See what I did there. Yeah. All right. Tonight, I mentioned today you guys are going to go see The Comedian starring Robert De Niro. That is directed by Taylor Hackford, who... Yeah, did Officer and Gentleman and the Ray Charles story.
Did you do that Al Pacino film that was where he was a singer a couple of years ago? I can't recall the name.
Yeah, the guy's name.
Didn't he direct Hail Hill Rock and Roll?
Yeah, that's right, in St. Louis.
That's right.
And then tonight we're seeing Gold. That stars Matthew McConaughey. Not to be confused with Fool's Gold, which also starred Matthew McConaughey.
That's right.
That's a true story about a guy who finds a bunch of gold, I think. I don't know a whole lot about it. It's directed by Steve Gaghan, who hasn't directed a movie since in Syriana with George Clooney a few years ago.
It's got a heck of a supporting cast. One of your buddies is in it, Stacey Keach.
Is it? I didn't know that. It's got Dallas Bryce Howard in it as well. I think she's the female lead. So we'll be back next Monday and we'll review that. Also, we're supposed to see Dog's Purpose tomorrow night, which is directed by Lasse Hallström, who also directed My Life as a Dog. So this is his second dog movie. There's been some controversy.
Oh, yes.
Apparently they forgot to bring in the stunt dog for a key scene.
Well, they have a video of this dog being manhandled and mistreated, and it's weird. This is just going to tick off the audience that this movie is entirely meant for.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it is too bad. I hope this. I really hope this blows over, frankly. This is all about adopting dogs and love for dogs and things like that. I don't know. Yeah,
this is a PR nightmare. I don't think they can overcome.
Yeah,
I mean they canceled the world premiere and the red carpet thing last week. So I'd be very surprised if we get to see it tomorrow night. I'm sure the studio would love to just put it on the shelf for a couple of months, but I guess they're committed.
Yeah,
a week to go.
All right. Well, we'll see. Well, the screening tomorrow night has not been canceled as of now, but maybe it will be. But if not, and we end up seeing it, look for my review of Dog's Purpose. I'm reviewing that. Look for my review Thursday night at WeirdMovieGeeks.com. Let's talk about a few things going on locally. I saw Citizen Kane on Saturday. Mm. You ever seen that?
I've heard of that. I've heard good things.
Screen,
They're remaking it with Adam Sandler. Is the High Point classic film. Next month, which is February 11th, they're doing Barefoot in the Park, which I've never seen. Is that Neil Simon?
Yes, that is. That's Neil Simon.
Robert
Redford, Jane Fonda. Yeah. It was a big Broadway hit, inspired a TV show. So, yeah.
All right. And then over at Webster U, they got a documentary about a sort of a real-life Truman Show called Under the Sun, about a Korean girl who they film a year in her life and broadcast it. Everybody wants to just watch this girl's life. It's a documentary, and it'll be at 7:30 Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I don't know much about it. And, Jim, you went to the Zeke Film meeting the other night. Tudor was the head of Zeke Film. He was our guest last week. And how long did that go on and on?
That went a little over 2 hours, and it was very entertaining. They did Max Voisey did a little trivia, so I got the La La Land soundtrack with all the songs. Yeah. So I'm loving that.
Didn't you get that from the studio?
Well, no, the one from that they sent us was just the background music. This is actually.
So what was their best film according to?
Well,
Zeke's?
What do you think?
I don't know.
It was La La Land, of course. It was their favorite film of the year, but they had a tie at number 9, so they didn't have an actual number 10. Their ties were a couple of films you liked. Love and Friendship and The Lobster.
The Lobster is great.
I love those too.
And I don't know the exact list, but it included Arrival, included Moonlight, included The Witch, included Zootopia, and I believe they also had, I think Jackie was number 3 and Hell or High Water was number 2.
Also go to ZekeFilm.org, I believe. Don't they have an org?
I think so.
Go to ZekeFilm.org and look at what their 10...
Mighty fine list.
And one other thing I wanted to talk about, what a great opportunity to see some classic Disney animated features on the big screen. Disney Enchanted Tales is a month-long film series they're having over at
The Marcus Theaters.
Marcus / Werenberg Theaters. But I've never seen Dumbo on the big screen. I'm kind of excited about that. I'm going to go full Robert Stack and sob like a big baby.
It's a great movie, man.
No doubt. Frozen, February 3rd through the 5th. Dumbo, February 10th through the 12th. Aladdin, which I have seen on the big screen, February 17th through the 20th. And Alice in Wonderland, which I've never seen on the big screen.
Which was the first Disney feature to be shown, animated feature to be shown on television, by the way.
Right?
Yeah.
That's February 24th through 26th. And I don't know the times, but I think they're going to show them 4 or 5 times throughout the day, starting in the morning. That's Disney Enchanted Tales film series. All right. Jim wants to say goodbye to Miguel Ferrer from RoboCop and then a bunch of TV shows.
Some other feature films.
Seems like all the obits have really focused on his TV career.
Well, he was in Twin Peaks and Crossing Jordan and all that. So.
I'm not that familiar. I do remember him from RoboCop because he got shot in the kneecaps.
That's right. That's a great sequence.
Yeah. All right. Well, he was only 61. That's too bad. Yeah. All right. Nobody else died
of note.
So that's good, I guess. All right. Let's move on. The Oscar nominations. Woo! That's always a big deal. That those are announced tomorrow morning, I assume.
Yeah, so I understand they're not going to be broadcast live. They're going to be streamed live. No. Yeah, yeah.
Is it still super early in the morning?
Yeah. So I would imagine that the morning news shows will probably talk about it once they get the live stream. But it's weird that they're not going to have the cameras. I guess they're not going to have the press in the room there or anything like that. You're just going to announce it to a single a computer camera.
They're just going to tweet them, kind of like Donald Trump and his relationship with the press corps. Well, I think, you know, this is we're going to talk about what we think they're going to announce tomorrow, not what we hope they announce, because I'm looking at this list that I have in front of me, and this is the most least enthusiastic year for Oscars, in my opinion, in my book, in a long time. I don't really care about most of these movies.
I got some horses in the race.
Well, I do, too, a couple, but you know, not past year. I'm not that excited about it, but that's okay. Let's start with Best Actor.
Well, of course, the front runner is Kate. Is from Kate? One of your well, no, not Kate, but from one of your from one of your favorite films.
Well, Manchester, Casey Affleck in Manchester by the Sea. Who's,
yeah, I think
you know
be,
it's a wonderful he's film a shoe-in. In my opinion, he's a shoe-in. But his performance is just really career making.
Yeah. I also think Tom Hanks has got to be a shoe-in.
I don't know that much about that.
I think you might be right.
Yeah, he's maybe the fourth or fifth there. I would love to see Joel Edgerton in there for he's more of a dark horse for Lion.
Yeah, I think so.
It's a flashy performance, but it's very very good.
I think I'd be surprised if Michael Keaton's not in there. I think The Founder the timing of its release is perfect for an Oscar nom.
It really hasn't got that much, you know, with the Critics Awards at the end of the year with the Golden Globes or the Broadcasters.
Well, I know how many of those critics saw it in time.
Well, I know the broadcast critics got a screener of it, so they did get to see it.
I also think Andrew Garfield will be nominated for Hacksaw Ridge.
I think Denzel definitely.
Possible.
Well, I think Garfield. Maybe if he hadn't come out with the Silence, maybe they would have bypassed Garfield. But he was so great in both of those films. I think they're going to need, and they always like, you know, a young new guy to throw in a nomination at. So I think he's almost a shoe-in. And then, you know, Adam Driver got New York Film Critics Best Actor for Patterson, but I don't see the Oscars.
That's a very, very long shot for that film. It's a delightful film.
And
he's good in it.
And Denzel. Performance,
and Denzel is you know, going to get nominated, but I don't think he's going to take it.
Oh, no.
I think it's pretty Casey, I think, has
it.
Yeah,
I think that's pretty clear.
I would say so. All right, let's move on then. Best Actress, I think Natalie Portman's a shoe-in.
Oh, yes.
Emma Stone's a shoe-in.
Definitely
Emma Stone. Ryan Gosling might get a Best Actor for La La Land. A long shot, I won't mention that.
And I think Annette Bening, too, for 20th
Century. For 20th Century, I think she's got a good chance. She's got
to be nominated, not necessarily to win.
Yes. I think it's going to probably go to Natalie Portman.
I think Isabella Huppert will probably be up for Elle.
I hope so.
And Ruth Negga for Loving.
Another wonderful
couple of long shots. I think I'd love to see Kate Beckinsale up for Love and Friendship. She was amazing in that film.
Oh, man, I agree.
Yeah.
And then Meryl Streep possibly for, what was the one where she was the singer?
Oh, Florence Foster Jenkins.
That's
a possibility.
Yeah,
I think
that's a little more
of a long shot.
But I guess I don't know who they're going to give it to. Maybe Natalie Portman.
I think probably Natalie Portman.
It'd either be
her or Isabelle Huppert. I think so.
All right, so we'll find out tomorrow. Let's move on to Best Supporting Actor. I think Jeff Bridges is a shoe-in.
Yeah, I think Mahershala Ali for Moonlight is a shoe-in.
Sure. No,
that's true.
I wasn't even sure which one he was when everybody kept talking about it. I thought he was the guy that played the main character in the final third of the story, but he was the drug dealer at the beginning.
Yes.
Okay, so I didn't even. That's how much of an impression that guy made on me.
He made more of an impression on me. On some of the critics, he's gotten a couple of Critics Awards already. Yeah. So yeah, I think those two are definite.
I think Aaron Taylor Johnson won the Golden Globe. I don't think he was particularly good in Nocturnal Animals, but I think they may give him a nom. I don't think he's going to win anything.
I think
and maybe Ben Foster also for Helen Hunt.
Could
be.
Yeah.
And Dev Patel for Lion is a good candidate. Although I thought it was more of a lead.
Supporting.
But I thought it was more a lead performance.
I thought
there he's been getting supporting nominations.
Yeah. Also, Alan Rickman. I wouldn't leave him out. He's kind of a dark horse, but he died and everybody loves him and he was never nominated and he was
and
very, very
actor.
Good in Eye in the Sky.
He's
may be right.
He's terrific in Eye in the Sky. Yeah, for sure. And I'd still love to see any of the guys from Denial get in there, but that's that's a very, very long shot. Timothy Spall, sadly, especially.
Yeah, I think you're in denial thinking that's going to get any nominations. All right, let's move on to the supporting actress. I think Viola Davis is a shoe-in. I think she's going to win.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's more than likely. I think Michelle Williams from Manchester is definitely going to be in the category. Right. I think Naomi Harris might get a nomination for Moonlight. Yeah. That's a possibility. Yes.
What about these Hidden Figures gals?
I think Octavia Spencer is the only one that I think will probably be in the mix. I think they're probably promoting Taraji P. Henson for Best Actress, but Octavia is considered the supporting part in that, I believe.
Yeah, I think so.
But there's been some good
performances. And Nicole Kidman
for
Lion got some noms, but she said some nice things about Donald Trump last week, so that probably killed her chances of getting an Oscar nom. What about Greta Gerwig?
Yeah, in Jackie.
Or, no, for 20th Century Women is what there is. But
either one, I'd say she's almost unrecognizable in Jackie, so that might be the one to attract more attention.
Yeah, but it was kind of a small part. It wasn't that significant of a role, frankly. I think 20th Century Women's a juicier role, but it's kind of a lousy movie, in my opinion. All right, so Viola Davis, I think, has this all wrapped up.
I think
with a tiny bow, a nice bright bow on it.
There you go. Let's move on to Best Director. Damien Chazelle probably has this wrapped up.
I think so. I think Barry Jenkins. I think Barry Jenkins for Moonlight. I think Barry Lonergan. Is that his name?
Kenneth Lonergan.
I said Barry Jenkins. Yeah, I mentioned him up there.
I don't think Manchester by the Sea was a particularly well-directed film. I think the strength was in the writing.
He's definitely going to get one for writing.
I think Mel Gibson will be up for Hacksaw. I think that's the one sort of old-school Hollywood movie. All these other movies premiered at Landmark Theaters. They got to go with something.
Is that true of Hell or High Water? That wasn't so much a landmark.
But I don't think that's going to be. I'm just talking about these ones I have listed as best director. Oh. They might get. They might give Scorsese a nod for Silence. Although I don't
know.
You think so? Okay.
That's kind of a long shot. But I'll bet he gets a nod.
Yeah, everybody loves him, and this is it is a really good movie. Although, is it even still playing?
It's still around, I think.
I'm sure it's playing somewhere.
I loved it, but it's not for everyone.
No, definitely not.
And who else do I have? Tom Ford may be up for Nocturnal Animals. Did we say him already?
Yeah.
Villeneuve for
Arrival.
Which I didn't care for Arrival, but
a lot of love out there for Arrival.
Yeah, it's just surprising. So in my opinion.
Very popular.
All right, let's keep moving on. I've got some other. Do you guys have other nominees? I have Screenplay Original.
I was going to say Animated Feature also.
I don't have that. Let's talk about screenplays. I think Manchester by the Sea is probably going to win everything.
And Moonlight.
For original screenplay, I like the original screenplay to Hell or High Water. I think
that was a great screenplay. And Jackie had a good screenplay. I think Woody Allen's Cafe Society was a wonderful screenplay.
Oh, that's a very long shot.
They love Woody. The Academy loves Woody. The guy's been nominated like 35 times.
Not all love for that.
I think another long shot might be the Coen brothers for Hail Caesar.
Oh, I'd like to see that.
The Founder might get a...
That's an idea.
La La Land is probably going to win Best Picture, but I don't think the strength is in the screenplay. I think it's in the music and the acting.
Although it did get a Golden Globe screenplay.
Did it? Let's move on to Adapted Screenplay. I have Moonlight. I don't know what the heck Moonlight's adapted
it's,
from.
It's from a play,
Is that right?
An unproduced play, I think.
And I think Fences might get an adaptation, although it's pretty much just the play on
screen.
It is.
That's kind of weird. I think Whit Stillman might get a nom for his Love and Friendship
screenplay. He got the St. Louis Film Critics, didn't he? Whit Stillman for adapted screenplay for Love and Friendship, which is a terrific screenplay.
Right. Isn't Ellen adapted?
I don't know.
I think so,
Okay, is it based on a book?
Right, I think it is.
I also have Lion written down here.
And Love and Friendship, that's a great adapted screen.
That's what we're saying.
What Stillman, so who knows? Who cares?
Yes.
I think, who's going to win that one, though?
I think Fences might, but I would love to see Whit Stillman get it for it.
Yeah, all right, let's move on to cinematography. I think La La Land's probably a shoe-in for this. Arrival, I didn't care for the film, certainly looked good. Silence looked amazing. Hacksaw Ridge looked amazing.
Well, so did Moonlight and
Love and
Jackie.
Friendship.
I love the cinematography in Jackie.
Yeah,
and Love
gorgeous.
And Friendship.
Yeah, very, very nice.
And Jimmy, you have I didn't write Good down animated films. What do you think the animated films are going to be?
Definitely Zootopia. I think Moana has a really good shot at it.
What about Kubo?
Kubo and the Two Strings, definitely. The other two are kind of up for grabs. It could be another Hollywood film, could be Trolls, but I've been hearing some good things about this film called My Life as a Zucchini. Also, a film called Red Turtle, which we got a screener DVD of it. Yeah, I think it could really finish strong in that category, but it's going to go to Zootopia, no doubt.
Yeah, so, probably.
Yeah, that's a shoe-in. Put your money on it.
I think you're right.
What about Sing?
No.
What about what about Monster Trucks?
That didn't come out in time.
All right. Let's move on to the big kahuna, Best Picture. Now, what do they nominate between 5 and 10? That is so stupid. I wish they'd just go back to 5. This just drives me nuts.
Well, they think they can bring in more viewers on television
so
by making more.
Let's assume that they nominate 10 films. There's probably going to be 8. They always say that, and it always ends up being 8.
Or 9, yeah. But there's only five real serious ones.
La Land, Moonlight, Hacksaw Ridge, Manchester by the Sea, Arrival.
Loving, Jackie. Perhaps.
I wouldn't count out Hidden Figures just because it's getting a lot of
it.
It's doing really well. And
I hope L. we don't know.
That's a long. Well, it's been blocked from the foreign film category.
Well,
hasn't
it been blocked.
It?
It's just France submitted a different film.
That's too bad.
That is too bad.
And I wouldn't count out Silence either. You know, Silence is a powerful film. I think they're going to give it some. It's not going to win anything, but
yeah. That's a possibility.
And Hell or High Water, possibly. Lion, possibly. I mean, they do 10. I mean, there's a lot. I don't think they're going to do 10, though, because I don't think there's 10 quite worthy. Loving, maybe. Who knows?
Weinstein's behind Lion, so that could get
Picture. Maybe Sully. They might put the, it's not going to win, but it might make it.
Yeah,
I'd like
the
to
founder.
See Patterson, but that won't happen.
Yeah, I guess we'll know next week because we'll know because they're going to announce it tomorrow morning, and we'll have our show next week, and we can talk about our thoughts about the noms next week. And we're going to have to wrap this up, though. We'll be back next week, and we're going to review Gold and The Comedian. And what else are we going to review?
Maybe Dog's Purpose?
Maybe Dog's Purpose,
yeah. Never know.
We'll always have plenty to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
Because we always do. And but for now, we're going to have to wrap this up. I'm Tom Stockman.
Jim Batts.
Kate Marquis.
And be sure to check us out again next week.
You're happy in your work, Johnny.
By the lift, quick march.